3, 2, 1.
What will the world look like 10 or 20 years from now? The Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast is here to give you a peek. And we can't wait to show you what's coming. Subscribe now.
A judge sides with former President Trump and allows a third party to review documents seized from his Florida home. Plus, oil producers cut output after 3 months of price slides, and Liz Truss takes over as the UK's new prime minister.
Britain is in the midst of an energy crisis, and one of her first actions, despite being a libertarian, is likely to be a huge state intervention to try and effectively reduce people's energy bills.
It's Tuesday, September 6th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Ukraine says a fire caused by Russian shelling has effectively disconnected the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant from Ukraine's electricity grid. Before the war, the facility, Europe's largest nuclear plant, provided about a fifth of Ukraine's total electricity. Ukraine has for weeks accused Russia of deliberately shelling the plant, while Russia has in turn blamed Ukrainian forces. Russia did not immediately comment on the latest accusation. A federal judge has granted former President Donald Trump's request for an independent review of documents seized from his Florida residence. The order, appointing a special master, temporarily blocks the government from using the documents in a possible criminal investigation. It does not, however, stop the government from continuing its national security review of Trump's removal of the documents. U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon also allowed Trump to assert claims of executive privilege over the documents, in addition to attorney-client protections. The OPEC Plus group of oil-producing countries has agreed to cut production for the first time in more than a year. The move comes amid worries about weakening global demand. The group announced it will produce 100,000 fewer barrels a day. The journal's Benoit Faucon says the reduction is a sign that member countries are already pumping at near capacity.
So they think they may as well squeeze as many dollars as possible out of every barrel. The impact of this is to potentially put a floor on prices, which OPEC Plus members appears to want to be at around $108.
The price of oil has declined 25% in the last 3 months. And Ireland has fined Instagram owner Meta more than $400 million for allegedly mishandling data about children. The fine, announced Monday by Ireland's Data Protection Commission, is the second largest under an EU privacy law and follows an investigation into whether Instagram exposed more contact information of minors who operated business accounts than if they operated personal accounts. Meta said the decision related to old settings it had updated more than a year ago, and that it plans to appeal the calculation of the fine. Prices across the globe are, believe it or not, coming down a bit. Economists at JP Morgan report that global inflation was just 0.3% last month. That is less than half of what it was for the first part of the year on a month-to-month basis. And among the things getting less expensive, energy and commodities. So what is driving prices down? Wall Street Journal economics reporter Gwynne Gilford is here now with us to help answer that. Hey, Gwynne.
Hey.
Gwynne, break down for us what factors are beginning to take the edge off of inflationary pressures lately.
Yeah, so we have this global slowdown happening, and China is really at the heart of that dynamic. China consumes an astonishing amount of resources. It's building huge apartment blocks and building new roads and things like that. In 2021, it consumed something like 70% of the world's iron ore imports, and 55% of refined copper worldwide, 15% of oil. So, you know, when China slows down and it stops needing to consume all these resources, it takes the pressure off prices for these commodities everywhere. But the other thing that's happening there is Chinese consumers are pretty freaked out by their home values plummeting, and also by really intense lockdowns happening. And the labor market is pretty weak too. So with the crumbling of consumer confidence, their spending has dropped off, and Chinese manufacturers need other markets to export to sell somewhere else. And, you know, that's creating pressure to cut prices.
Are those forces enough to drive a sustained global easing of overall inflation?
They definitely could be. You know, commodities prices have come down really sharply, and these were driving so much of the headline inflation that we've seen in the last year, but also because demand for goods worldwide is falling as people shift to services. And also, you know, as you have this slowdown developing and people are pulling back on spending because of high inflation. So, you know, that looks good. There are some other things that could keep pushing up on inflationary pressures. So, you know, the labor market in the U.S. is super, super tight. That is allowing people to keep spending, and it's keeping demand high. And that's, you know, especially on services, that's going to rent prices are continuing to rise at a really fast rate. So that's going to keep some upward pressure on prices. And you also have, you know, the natural gas situation in Europe, and with what's happening with Russia cutting off supplies and the prospect of they're cutting off more, that's already sent natural gas prices up a ton and electricity prices. But, you know, as one economist, the chief economist at Comerica, Bill Adams, put it to me, he said, the Russia and Ukraine situation, the implications for energy markets there, that might end up overwhelming the effects of China slowing in the rest of this year. So, you know, we could still see pretty high inflation through the end of this year. But going into 2023, China's housing and the sort of fallout from that and the disinflationary pressure, that's probably going to be a bigger deal in 2023.
That was Wall Street Journal economics reporter Gwyn Gilford. Gwyn, thanks so much for the update.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we'll look at the challenges facing Liz Truss as she takes over as the UK's newest prime minister. That's after the break.
What then will the future reveal?
There's one thing we know about the future. It's being built now.
We all have a stake in the future.
The future.
The future.
The future.
And the Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast is here to give you a glimpse of what's on the way. I'm Danny Lewis. Join us as we dig into how science and technology are shaping the future.
For that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Power changes hands in the United Kingdom today with Liz Truss taking control of the job of Prime Minister from Boris Johnson, who earlier this summer announced he'd resign amid several scandals. Truss, who had been Johnson's foreign secretary, comes from the same Conservative Party as Johnson and is taking the helm at a time of tumult in the UK. Joining us now to get us up to speed on who Liz Truss is and what her immediate tasks will be is Wall Street Journal UK correspondent Max Colchester. Max, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Lee.
So tell us about Liz Truss. She is not a household name really outside of Europe. What do we need to know about her?
Well, Liz Truss, the first thing you need to know about Liz Truss is that she's actually been in the Conservative government in one job or another since 2014. So she's a long-standing Conservative minister. And she has campaigned over the last 10 weeks to try and take over from Boris Johnson in the mold of Margaret Thatcher. She is pitching herself as a libertarian, small-state Conservative who will tackle the long-term economic challenges facing the UK by effectively cutting regulation, cutting taxes, and giving people liberty to make the choices they want to make and make more money effectively. And so that's really the image that she's trying to project as she enters Downing Street.
What is going to be the most pressing issue for Truss on day one?
So the challenge here is that Britain, despite not importing very much energy or gas from Russia itself, is heavily reliant on international markets. And gas spot prices have obviously shot up since the invasion of Ukraine. And British households have their energy prices capped. And those caps are revised on a regular basis. And come October, that is going to be revised upwards to the tune of 80% as the prices are rebased to market rates. So effectively, households are suddenly going to see overnight their energy bills jump up. And that is going to be a problem for a lot of people because they simply can't afford to pay it. And businesses certainly can't afford to pay it. So the big question now is, how does this Conservative government get ahead of this by effectively bailing businesses and people out, by effectively paying their energy bills?
Yeah, based on her past, what can we say about how she is likely to tackle this? And from her time in the cabinet and in parliament, do people believe she's up to that task?
Well, Liz Truss is a strange mix of sort of, she's an ideologue in some sense, in the sense she is deeply wedded to the idea of personal liberty, but she's also a pragmatist. And I think in the end, the political reality of this is that if you allow households and businesses to go to the wall as soon as you enter office, you're not going to last in office very long. So I assume pragmatism will trump ideology here, and we will see huge state intervention to try and minimize the economic pain that households and businesses will face here. So that's the first answer. I mean, and in many ways, that's the easy choice, right? It's easy to go and spend money. What will be harder for her in the medium term will be working out how this is paid for. She's pledged not to raise taxes, and who pays for this in the end? Where does that money in the end come from? And it looks like it's going to be borrowed.
Besides dealing with this current economic energy mess, what else is on Truss's plate?
The main issue is throughout her campaign this summer, where she toured Britain pitching herself as the next prime minister, her main message was we need to move away from this narrative of declinism in the UK. And she is proposing to do that, you know, pledging basically a radical overhaul of the state to do that. But it's problematic. I mean, Britain's been bumping along with low productivity since the financial crisis. It's left the EU, the European Union, which has added friction to trading with its biggest trade partner. It's looking for a place in the world as it's left the EU. So she has a lot to deal with in a way to recast Britain as this sort of slightly lost nation that is trying to find a new way into something of a sort of nimble but powerful force on the international stage with a more productive economy.
And finally, Max, what does the British public think of Liz Truss? We should perhaps remind people she wasn't elected in a general election, but rather just by the members of the Conservative Party.
Well, in a way, this is her big challenge, is that she doesn't really have a mandate. And she was elected by 170,000 members of the Tory party. Within Parliament, roughly only a third of lawmakers backed her in the early rounds of voting, before the electorate got to choose. And among the wider public, she's not particularly popular. There was a poll out yesterday showing that only 1 in 7 Brits thought that she would do a better job than Boris Johnson. She does not have a high net approval rating, and she has not won an election. So any slip-up will be jumped on, and she will be under huge pressure from within her party to try and find solutions to these very difficult problems. And if she doesn't, as we've seen, this is a Conservative Party that's jettisoned 2 of its own prime ministers in the last 3 years, and will probably have no compunction about jettisoning a third if it means that they have a chance of winning an election, which is likely to take place in 2024. So she has to act decisively and very fast and in very difficult circumstances.
That was Wall Street Journal UK correspondent Max Colchester. Max, thanks so much.
Thanks, Luke.
And finally, summer is winding down, and so are U.S. state fairs. Minnesota wrapped up its shindig yesterday, and among the crown jewels of the Minnesota State Fair is naming Princess K of the Milky Way. It's a pageant where the winner and 9 runners-up leave with busts of themselves carved in butter that, along with the shavings, can weigh up to 90 pounds. Wall Street Journal senior Midwest correspondent Joe Barrett says it's a prize that can pose some royal dilemmas.
And then the question is, what do you do with that? So some people have held onto their butterheads in their mom's freezer for 28 years is the oldest one that we were able to find. Another woman just has her face, which is 42 years old. And then a lot of others, you know, have done things like have a big party called a corn feed where they have sweet corn and they let people roll the corn over their butter faces. Other people had one sculpted of their husband and had both of them displayed at a wedding. So, you know, it's just a lot of buttery fun up in Minnesota.
And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.